Good afternoon. I'm Ana Lopez Defiti. I'm with the University of South Carolina, and I direct the Division of Medicaid Policy and Research at the Institute for Families and Society at that university. So one of the things that I want to talk with you a little about is I have no affiliations or any associations related to any of the things that I'm showing you, with one notable exception, and that is we have a birth outcomes initiative that is part of our state, and the pain medication and misuse among pregnant women, I chair that data committee, which is an interdisciplinary committee and multi-state agency committee. And so I do have that affiliation in terms of the data. One of the things I want to make sure that we talk a little bit about with this presentation is some of the factors associated with prescription opiate use among pregnant women in the South Carolina Medicaid program. I want to sort of describe the methodology for identifying opiate use during pregnancy using Medicaid claims data. And then I want to talk about the upshoot of this initial study that was done and some of the actions that South Carolina is taking in order to address across multiple agencies and multiple entities how to turn that tide within the context of South Carolina. We did a retrospective study using women of childbearing age 18 to 44 enrolled in Medicaid fee-for-service and managed care, and we looked at two-year period of time, July 1st, 2011 through June 30th, 2013. We did a couple of things. We excluded claims in the two-year span with outliers, 50-plus pills per day with error calculations on the claim. And that is, we wanted to make sure that we looked at the actual claim data to make sure that there was some consistency between what was being prescribed and the actual dosage that was put into place. And so for those claims that we found that there was an inconsistent pattern where we could not reconcile what was in that claim history, we excluded that. We looked at approximately 1.8 million pharmacy claims for approximately 155,000, 154,000 women in ages ranging between 18 to 34. And then we used the opioid therapy medication use evaluation by Janssen Pharmaceuticals to analyze utilization patterns of opioid therapy with a validation. The software allowed us to look at it from the perspective of nationally. It also allowed us to look at patterns as they relate to the Medicaid population. And so it gave us a fairly good perspective in terms of where we stood in South Carolina relative to what was known out there. The software allows us to look at 12-month intervals with restrictions on the following: chronic short-acting opioid of 60 days minimum. It allows us to look at GI overlap of 45 days. And then it did a series of things so that we could control for those drugs that we knew were either in the form of an interaction and or that would affect the overall. The software looks at 23 different utilization measures of output. Therapy, it allows us to look at age group distribution, new long-term acting opioids, initiation, average days of supply of prescription, long-acting prescriptions per 1,000, acetaminophen dose distribution, just to name a few. Not all of these will be highlighted with this presentation. I'm very much aware of time limitation. So when we looked at the average age for the overall opioid study, it was 34 for both fiscal years, where the majority of the patients were 35 to 44 years of age, 52% for both fiscal year 12 and fiscal year 13, compared to 48% who were between the ages of 18 and 34. Now, again, we were particularly interested in women of childbearing age because of the long-term implications, as well as something that our previous colleagues had talked about in terms of prescription being one of the key indicators of potential misuse. We found that the two most commonly filled long-acting therapy prescriptions for both fiscal year 12 and 13 were morphine, 43% to 46%, and fentanyl transdermal patch, 24% to 22%, respectively. The two most commonly filled chronic therapy prescriptions for both fiscal years were hydrocodone, acetaminophen, and oxycodone, acetaminophen. Now, you saw the previous presentation in terms of the upswing in terms of those numbers. When we looked at unique women with pharmacy claims. We, as I mentioned, we looked at roughly 1.8 million claims for each of those years, with a little over 154,000. When it came down to looking at the number of unique women who were either taking long-term acting chronic or fast-acting therapy pharmacy claims, those numbers became slightly lower from that 151,000 or so in terms of the claims. And then we found that there was a unique number of women in fiscal year 12 and 13, roughly around 6,000 women, that we could see had a consistent pattern associated with long-acting, chronic, fast-acting therapy pharmacy claims. And these were unique. And then what we found was that for the women of reproductive age, the average consumption of supplies per prescription for the top two chronic conditions were 24.6 milligrams, 24.8 milligrams of hydrocodone. And that's rounded off. The Medicaid claims does this funky kind of thing in terms of how it rounds out the actual prescription, and then acetaminophen. When we looked at the other patterns and we found that the average days of supplies, you can see that we tracked that between a variety of different levels of prescriptions. Again, we found that hydrocodone and oxycodone were among the two highest for each of those 2 years. When we looked at what was statistically significant across all of the prescription patterns that we found, hydrocodone, acetaminophen, was the one thing that we found was significant across all of the different prescribing patterns that we saw. This was also key because what we found was that it was highly associated with long-term use. So when we looked at long-term use, and we also looked at the number of prescribers per patient for this particular drug, what we found was that we had, for both fiscal years, at least 42 to 43% had only one prescriber. Roughly between 27 to 29% had two prescribers. 15% had three prescribers. And in fiscal year 12, we had 16% who had four or more prescribers and 13% who had four or more prescribers. So again, clearly what that said to us is that we were looking at individuals who were not just taking this particular prescription for that one-time surgery after surgery or dental visit, but rather that we were seeing a pattern associated with multiple shopping, multiple prescribers, multiple identification of individuals being seeking refills. Now, one of the things that we also did was we wanted to understand this pattern within the context of our own state. And so using geographical information system, we did this at the ZCTA level, which is a smaller unit of analysis than county or zip code, because we wanted to be able to associate this back to providers within the Medicaid program. We also wanted to understand this because of the patterns associated with what we know were to be common elements in our state. So what we knew was that this portion of the state tended to be predominantly African American in terms of larger proportionality of individuals, and this part of the state uniformly tended to be much more Caucasian, and also tended to be the part of the state that had some of the higher social economic, some of the better outcomes related to overall health outcomes, lower chronic disease prevalence, higher access to primary care providers. We also found that there was more of a series of pain management clinics and providers in this part of the state than in this part of the state that tended to be much more rural and lacked greater access to overall providers related to identify specialty of pain management. What we then did is we wanted to understand this from this perspective of high-need neighborhood areas. And for high-need areas, we did a couple of things. We identified those as socially, economically deprived areas of the state. We also identified those areas as having high chronic disease prevalence and poor access to care. And so what you see is that the red in these areas identify those high need and neighboring areas with the orange. And the pattern associated with prescription high opioid use was not related to these high need areas. Again, significant, because it really pointed to the issue of access and the availability to be able to have multiple providers within that. We also wanted to understand this because we were looking at this issue from the perspective of women of childbearing age to understand that from the perspective of ratio of OBGYN providers to female Medicaid recipients. And again, you can see that that pattern was drastically different. There were greater numbers of OBGYN providers in those areas where we saw some of the highest needs. So let's talk very quickly about implications, and I'm going to go through these rather quickly. Anywhere between 4% and 26% of patients receiving chronic opioid therapy have an opioid use disorder. Among these patients, 1 in 10 misuse. And so for us, when we looked at over 6,000 patients that were prescribed hydrocodone and acetaminophen, and these were women and were likely to visit more than one prescriber to receive their prescription, were also most likely to be continuous users over a period of time. I'm going to skip this a little bit because I know that I'm running out of time. So let's talk about the state response because I think this is where we're at. This report set off a series of meetings in which the Inspector General of the state released a detailed report. South Carolina ranks 23rd highest per capita in overdose deaths as it relates to opioid. And so one of the things that we very quickly did as a state was the governor issued an executive order creating the Governor's Prescription Drug Abuse Prevention Council with Medicaid as an active member of that council. A Senate bill was put into in June 2014, which created a delegation of access to the prescription drug monitoring program. What we learned was that it was not required in South Carolina for all physicians to be part of the prescription monitoring program. And what we heard from the physicians when we surveyed them was that it was difficult for them to access it at the same time that they were engaged in patient activities. However, if there are guidelines were such that it would allow for a nurse practitioner or someone in their office to access that prescription monitoring program on their behalf, they were more likely to look at that. We also put into place a 24-hour pharmacy reporting requirement, a CAE requirement for controlled substances prescribing. And so as of this year, if you're a Medicaid provider in South Carolina, you must be part of a continuing medical education that addresses the issue of opioid use and opioid misuse. The other thing that is required is for our state there will be an annual report associating with not only the focus on and dealing with the issues of limits and supplies, but it also mandates that all of the state agencies, all of the councils address effective ways of providing treatment options as relates to opioid use and opioid misuse. This is rather significant for our state because we are one of those states that struggle within the context of access to care and shortage of providers. And so this was a major step that came out of this initial study where we began to look at women of childbearing age. Thank you, and I'd like to call our attention to the co-individuals who worked on this study with me, Dr. Meta Ayers, Dr. Tammy Cummings, and our team at the Institute for Families and Society. Thank you.